The next case is Buddy Webster v. Dean Guitars. Mr. Borgum is here for the appellant. Mr. Retu is here for the appellee. And when you are ready, Mr. Borgum, you may begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. Eric Bjorgum. May it please the court, Karishan Bjorgum, Pasadena, for plaintiff and appellant Buddy Webster. Your Honor, this case brings up a host of interesting theoretical issues, but we believe the result is fairly easy if we just look to the facts. This is because all reasonable inferences must go in favor of the appellant. And there are so many issues of fact in this case about when the case actually accrued. That it must go to trial to resolve these conflicts. The facts on the record are clear that in 1985, Buddy Webster modified a rock guitar made by Dean Guitars and turned it into a famous guitar known as the Dean from Hell, which I'll refer to as the DFH. He gave it to his young friend and mentee, Daryl Abbott. Was the same guitar that Daryl Abbott had won in a contest, secretly bought back by Mr. Webster, and Mr. Abbott went on to become, quote, Dimebag Daryl from Pantera, one of the most impressive guitarists of his generation. In fact, I just saw the other day that Pantera had passed 1 billion streams on Spotify. In creating the DFH, Mr. Webster also conceived of a graphic known as the Lightning Storm graphic, and in ensuing years, he has painted that graphic on dozens of guitars. I said the case can be easy for three main reasons. First, as the district court noted, the 11th Circuit has not yet adopted a standard for when a copyright case accrues. But regardless of what standard it does adopt, Mr. Webster had no reason to know in 2007 that the estate of Daryl Abbott was claiming ownership of the guitar.
He wasn't getting royalties, though, didn't he? He knew that the company had indicated, we're not paying you, we're paying somebody else.
Well, Your Honor, the company had indicated that it believed that the state owned the guitar. Dimebag Daryl was a huge persona. If they did a licensing deal with Dimebag Daryl, it could have been for his license, it could have been for trademark, it could have been for his endorsement. Buddy had no reason to believe that they were paying the company on a per guitar basis for copies of the graphic, which he knows he never transferred. And days
he knows he wasn't getting royalties, and he probably assumed somebody was, and it wasn't him.
That's true, and that's what happened in Petrella. And the court let the plaintiff wait for 9 years to file their case, 18 years after the plaintiff filed this copyright renewal.
Well, how about when the company told him, said, you know, we think it's the estate. If you want any money, you better sue the estate. He didn't sue the estate.
Your Honor, he would have no standing to sue the estate because the estate was not making copies. This is a court of limited jurisdiction. This is not a case of adverse possession in common law.
But the issue isn't whether or not he could sue the estate. The issue is whether or not he was aware of the infringement of his copyright and the ownership of his copyright in 2004 when that conversation took place, right?
He was aware of the infringement, but the question becomes whether or not there's a separate statute of limitations for ownership. Under Petrella, he had all the time in the world to sue for infringement as long as he only goes back 3 years for damages.
Well, why isn't this more of an ownership claim as opposed to an infringement claim?
I would beg to differ with that because the estate was not making copies of the guitar. This is like a child saying, don't look at me, look at him. He had no reason to believe, unlike every case cited here, where there was a co-owner or two people who were in business who had been working together, he had no reason to believe that the estate of Dimebag Darrell owned that guitar because he created the copyright and he knows he never transferred it. That's an absurd statement for him to have to think, I have to sue the estate because they're licensing something. They're not violating any of the law under Section 106, which are the six rights of copyright. He would have no standing to sue the estate. And if the estate owned the copyright, Mr. Webster has been using it openly, notoriously, for 10, 15 years, been in articles. The estate did not make a claim for debt relief. The estate
has
never...
somebody is claiming ownership and it's not him. It's either the estate... Or you say that they could be licensing it and not claiming ownership. Well, if they're licensing, they have to license from somebody, and the somebody would be the company that would be claiming ownership. He knows that there's some adverse claim of ownership, that it's not him. So he knows there's a problem, does he not?
He knows there's a problem, but who would he sue in that instance? He couldn't sue the estate because the estate's not making copies.
When there's a conversation in 2007 with the CEO at Dean, I think his name was Rubinson, mm-hmm. where they discussed working out a royalty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly, Your Honor. And if there's going to be repudiation of ownership, it should be express repudiation. It shouldn't be something that leaves Mr. Webster hanging saying, well, maybe they're going to do a deal with me. That's not express repudiation of ownership. That's Mr. Rubinson hedging his bets and saying, well, maybe Buddy won't sue me, and maybe I'll just try and hold out this royalty that I'll give to him. Why would he think Buddy needs a royalty if he didn't think Buddy had any rights? It's clear that Buddy had rights. It's clear that he never transferred them. The record of the U.S. Copyright Office to this day is that he's the owner, and they made a new version of the guitar in 2015. Is he supposed to sit back forever and let them have a perpetual license to copy his thing? He is getting license fees from other manufacturers. But this manufacturer can go on forever and make this guitar over and over again in new models while he has to sit there and say, that's my copyright. No one else owns it. No one else has registered it.
So I'm unclear now. Mm-hmm. When does the clock begin to run?
Well,
when do you argue that the clock begins to run?
At the very latest, 2015, when the final limited edition, the third limited edition that Mr. Webster's criticized for taking advantage of his friend's death. He had nothing to do with it. They're coming out with another limited edition, 2015. He says, I've had enough. I'm not associated with this. People online are saying, why do they keep profiting off this guy's death? And he said, I've had enough.
Under your theory, if the company puts out another limited edition, then the clock would reset.
Absolutely.
And so, but aren't you, if we were to adopt your theory of accrual, mm-hmm. wouldn't we be creating a circuit split, having all the other circuits that have spoken to this issue gone the other way and said in an ownership situation, it accrues once when there's notice?
But when there is successive infringements, no one's addressed this issue, and there has to be some plausible assertion of ownership. Where is the estate standing up and saying, I own this? It's unlike every other case. This allows someone to escape infringement just by saying, I think that guy owns it, go talk to him, and crossing their fingers that plaintiff waits 3 years to file a case.
Why is there an obligation on the part of the estate to affirmatively represent to your client that it owns it? Your client is put on notice of an ownership dispute when Dean Guitars is saying, look, we think the estate owes it, sue the estate. Why is that not enough?
Because it's not expressed repudiation of ownership. It's a rumor. Why would he hold out a royalty to Buddy and say, do you want a royalty if we go forward?
It's not pretty expressed. Much expressed repudiation as far as Dean is concerned. They've told you, no, we don't think that your client owns it.
So that then they have a perpetual license to keep making new models. It doesn't make any sense, Your Honor, that they can make new models for the life of the copyright.
But if we follow the First and the Second and the Fifth and the Seventh Circuit's mm-hmm. standard, as mm-hmm. well as Judge Birch's concurrence in mm-hmm. Calhoun versus Lillinus, mm-hmm. the standard is whether or not your client either knew or in the exercise of reasonable diligence should have known about an infringement. That's when the mm-hmm. clock should begin, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We would have to adopt the Sixth and the Ninth Circuit standards in order to accept your argument, wouldn't we?
I don't believe that, Your Honor. I think there's no reason that he knew or should have known when he knows he's the sole author and he knows that days before Daryl died, he was on an interview saying, Buddy created the guitar. There's no reason to think the estate, he'd probably get sanctioned under Rule 11 for bringing that case. He would have no reason to believe the estate owns the copyright, and the estate has sat on its heels and never made an assertion of ownership. Why? Why is that? Because it knows that no one can sign the copyright application because they would be committing fraud in the Copyright Office.
I think it's a bridge too far to assume why the estate has been silent on that. Mm-hmm. There could be any number of reasons.
Okay. Well, Buddy is out there collecting royalties right now. They know that. They know he filed this case. So they have waived their rights as well. It creates an absurd situation. He should be allowed to sue and just go back 3 years under Petrella, which he's allowed to do, and get damages. He lost all the damages when Daryl died. Millions of dollars. He's fine with that. That was his friend. He didn't want a profit on it.
Webster's getting royalties now from the sale of the guitar?
He's getting royalties from many guitars, okay. from another manufacturer.
Dean from hell?
Yeah, okay. Sure. Right. After this case was filed, we made a deal. They made a deal with the same
That's
person.
Not a part of this record, though, right?
I'll have to look, Your Honor. I'm out of time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. Ritu?
Thank you, Your Honor. Doug Ritu. I'm here with Anna Nadenoff. May it please the court. Your Honors, I'd like to address a couple points. First, there's no dispute. This case is about ownership. And because it is about the ownership of a copyright, the district court was correct in its analysis of the statute of limitations. Up until this case, or throughout this case, Webster has alleged that the sole issue here is ownership. In the summary judgment briefs, they said there's no issue on infringement. If Webster owns the copyright, he wins. Now, because this is an issue of ownership, we have to look at the statute of limitations under Section 507B. And we know that the statute of limitations accrues three years. A claim must be brought within 3 years after the time that a claim accrues. Now, Petrella, as counsel noted, involved the situation of infringement. That was a different case than ownership. Petrella was fundamentally different than ownership. There was no dispute in Petrella before the Supreme Court that the plaintiff actually owned, was the sole owner of the copyright at issue. And courts have said that Petrella does not displace the rule that the district court applied here, that there's a separate accrual rule for ownership claims. And there's a fundamental reason for that. And that's because for an infringement claim, every time a copy is made, that's a new infringement. And the court said you then apply the three-year statute of limitations to that. For an ownership claim, it only happens once. There's only one time when a copyright is made. And because of that, the claim must be brought within 3 years. Now, there's no dispute among the circuits that Petrella did not displace this rule. The Seventh Circuit explained in the consumer health case that Petrella didn't disturb it. And Petrella, pre-Petrella, the Second Circuit, the Sixth Circuit, and the Ninth Circuit maintain this rule. Petrella did not disturb that, didn't discuss it at all. And post-Petrella, in addition to the Seventh Circuit, the Tenth Circuit and Stan Lee maintain the separate accrual rule for ownership claims. We now have four district courts in this circuit, including this case, that have also maintained the distinction post-Petrella. We have Black Box, Prop Solutions, and Lott Johnson. And in addition to those cases, we have other cases in our briefs Post-briefing, there have been four more district court cases post-Petrella that have maintained this distinction. So where we stand now is the 1st, 2nd, 5th, 9th, 7th, 10th Circuit, plus this court in Calhoun. Judge Birch recommended and advocated in his concurrence for this rule to be maintained here as well. So you have an advocating for that standard in the 11th Circuit. So essentially, Mr. Webster is urging you to make a circuit split against this wave of authority. And fundamentally, we know that circuit splits in copyright are particularly troublesome. The Seven Arts case explained that creating inconsistent rules among the circuits would lead to different levels of protection in different areas of the country. And in the Fogarty case and in the Reed case, the Supreme Court has cautioned and admonished courts not to make circuit splits in copyright law.
Let's say we buy your theory of accrual, that this is an ownership case and it accrues when Mr. Webster is whether put on notice, should have known, whether it's repudiation. Here we have a situation where a third party has provided this notice. Can you walk me through why it's not necessary for the estate to have asserted its ownership right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. So first off, in this circuit, the circuit hasn't spoken to it, but district courts have, and Judge Birch and Calhoun said the standard is the statute of limitation runs when a plaintiff learns or should, as a reasonable person, have learned that the defendant was violating his or her rights. Now, counsel said that Mr. Webster could not have sued the estate back in 2005 when these guitars were being made. Well, that's not so, and we know it's not so because they sued the estate in this case. And the estate is doing the same thing today that it was doing back in 2007. So why could they sue the estate now but not back then? And the answer is they could have sued the estate because the estate was licensing its rights to Armadillo. Also, in answer to your question, we have several things that were going on where the estate was implicated. First of all, Mr. Rubinson, who has passed, and we can never get any evidence from him because of the delay here. He's no longer here. Had the case been brought timely within the statute of limitations, he would be alive. We would be able to get testimony from him, but we have that evidentiary prejudice. But he did say to Mr. Webster that the estate owns the copyright. Now, counsel suggested that that wasn't clear enough and it didn't reference the copyright, but it in fact did. The email in 2007 said that the consensus is that the estate owns the graphic. It was specific to the graphic. So Mr. Rubinson specifically said the estate owns the graphic. There's testimony that Mr. Webster understood that the people in the know who told that to Mr. Rubinson were the estate. So his understanding was that the estate, and this is, there's no dispute on this, Mr. Webster admitted that that he believed the estate told Mr. Rubinson that information. Additionally, we have some other things, and this is one of those cases where actions speak as loud as words do. In addition to the express repudiation that Mr. Rubinson had sent in writing, we also have the fundamental fact that Mr. Webster knew that these guitars were being made in 2005. He learned about it in 2004, then he knew that the guitars were being made in 2005. That's when he could have sued. He could have sued the estate. He could have sued Armadillo, but he waited. He waited over a decade to file the lawsuit. But he had a claim right there and then. And again, we know that because they were doing the same thing then that they're doing now that they were sued for. He also brought a conspiracy claim in this case, which I think is very telling because he said there was a conspiracy among the estate and among Armadillo to deprive him of his copyrights. Well, if there was a conspiracy back then, how could he now say that they were not operating in unison? Also, on the actions front, in addition to the email, in addition to Mr. Webster knowing that these guitars were being sold in 2005, we have two more very potent facts. Three more potent facts. After the email, the testimony is that Mr. Webster testified that he contacted Mr. Rubinson numerous times to complain about the ownership issue. And each time Mr. Rubinson said, take it up with the estate, sue the estate. So we have admitted numerous conversations where Mr. Rubinson, not only in writing, but also verbally rebuked the claim and repudiated the copyright claim as well. Then we have two more facts on top of it. As if that wasn't enough, we now have the fact that Mr. Webster wanted royalties for this graphic. Armadillo didn't pay those royalties. They paid the estate. And the testimony shows Mr. Webster testified three times that he assumed that the estate was getting paid royalties from Armadillo. So three times he assumed and presumed that that was the case. And he never got paid. Now, in the Kwan case, the Second Circuit said that there could be any number of events that can trigger accrual, trigger the statute of limitations on an ownership claim. Any number of things. And the case law shows that there are different things. In Calhoun, it was simply that the plaintiff should have known that the song he says is infringement was popular. Should have known that. That was enough for Judge Birch to say that triggered the statute of limitations. Other cases, there's been a letter. Some other cases, like the Silva case that we cited out of the Central District of California, the refusal to pay royalties was enough. Well, no matter how you slice it, we have here five different things. And I have seen no case where there were five different independent forms of repudiation. And again, those five things are the sale of the guitars openly that Mr. Webster knew about, the 2007 email that unequivocally said he does not own the graphic in the guitar, the subsequent conversations where Mr. Rubinson said, sue the estate, you don't own the copyright, the refusal to pay Mr. Webster royalties, and the payment of royalties to the estate. Now, in that email, there was a mention of working on a relic. And Mr. Webster says that there was mention of working on a relic, which and a suggestion that there could be a royalty for the work on that relic. Well, it turns out the record shows that Mr. Webster did have a deal with Armadillo, and they did make a guitar together. They actually worked together before this lawsuit was filed and made a special guitar for Mr. Webster. There can be no doubt that Mr. Rubinson did not intend to pay a royalty for the Dean from Hell graphic because he never did. He never paid that money. He kept saying no. And part of this was an olive branch. He said he wanted to make, in his email, he said, I'm all about making friends and not making enemies. But that is not enough to undo the repudiation. The repudiation was quite clear and it was unequivocal.
Didn't he, I thought it, the reason he didn't sue the Abbott estate was because he did not want to make his fan base mad.
Pardon, Your Honor?
He didn't file a suit against the estate because he didn't want to make the artists, the fan base mad.
Yes.
Wasn't that the reason that he didn't sue the estate?
That's one of the reasons, Your Honor. But Pantera was a beloved band back then and is a beloved band back now. Counsel noted that their downloads are at a record high, so he sued now. Why couldn't he sue then? I mean, in fact, the fervor for this band remains today. So that excuse is not enough to excuse, as the district court found, the failure to sue within the statute of limitations. I'll also note that there's one case we cited, the Sanchez case, where there's somewhat similar in the sense, as actually more of an olive branch was given in that case. But in Sanchez, the defendant repudiated ownership of the plaintiff's copyright, said, you don't own this. But he still paid royalty to the plaintiff, paid him a royalty. And he said he sent that royalty in the spirit of goodwill, time efficiency, and in an effort to do the right thing. And the court held in that case, and this is Southern District of Texas, that the payment does not indicate that the ownership dispute has been resolved, because in that same communication, there was a repudiation of ownership, like we have here. Although here, in this case, it's not as strong because for the plaintiff, because no royalties were paid, and it was very clear that the copyright was being repudiated. Another point that counsel made that I'd like to address, Your Honors, is that Mr. Webster owns the copyright, and he did obtain a copyright for this guitar. Now, he filed it in 2016 for a work that was created in 1986. That was the year, that's 30 years after. The work was created the year that Michael Jordan was the Rookie of the Year, Coke introduced the new Coke, and Microsoft introduced Windows 1.0. He then, even though the work was created back then, He didn't file the copyright until 2016. Now, in that copyright application, he initially said the publication date was 86. Copyright office said, well, if that case, you don't have a valid copyright because you don't have notice on it because it's a pre-89 work. So then he changed his date, his publication date, to 2004. Then he changed it again to 2005. The current date on that copyright registration is 2005 for publication. If a copyright doesn't issue within 5 years of the publication, there is no presumption of validity or ownership. So there are no presumptions on this copyright. Even were there any presumptions, we have evidence in this case that's uncontested that Mr. Webster did not paint this design. And I know the district court didn't rule on it, but the fact remains the repudiation was done in good faith and has solid grounds today because at the end of the day, we've learned through this case, even though through the passage of time it was difficult to get, somebody else painted this. Mr. Webster commissioned somebody else to paint this design. And
in theory, though, we don't know the facts. That would still mean Mr. Webster might have some claims to authorship if he told the artist what to do and how to draw it, right?
Not under 11th Circuit law, Your Honor. The MGB Holmes case and the Safeway case counsel that the idea is not protectable. And in fact, in those cases, somebody gave a sketch drawing. In the Safeway case, the artist gave a sketch drawing to the artist and said, draw this cornucopia in our stores. And even though they gave them a sketch and told them exactly what to do and told them which items to put on the mural, that wasn't enough for ownership because that's just merely an idea. It's the person who puts pen to paper or in this case, paint to guitar and actually creates it.
And the artist is actually settled at this point, correct?
The
artist of this design is settled at this point. He's out of the litigation.
That's right. And
Mr. Patchett, is that his name?
Yeah. Correct, Your Honor. And he has assigned the copyright to the estate. So they are the rightful owner of the estate. Again, going to the fundamental point, this case is about ownership. It's all a dispute about ownership. And when it's ownership, we know from virtually every circuit that's ruled on it, and now there have been many, that you must file within 3 years of the time that the claim accrues. And the claim accrues in the 11th Circuit when you knew or should have known about the infringement. In that case, it was January 2005 when these guitars were being made and when Mr. Webster absolutely could have sued the estate because, again, he just did so in this case. So why couldn't he do so back then? And that's when the claim accrues. And fundamentally, as Judge Birch explained in Calhoun, there's a fundamental reason for this rule. There's evidentiary prejudice, and there's unfairness to wading in the weeds and pouncing on a copyright years later. And we have just that in this case with all the fundamental witnesses, particularly Mr. Rubinson, having passed away.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Ritter.
You.
Mr. Borgum, you've reserved some time for rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Your Honors, after all of that, I think it's clear that what I said in the very beginning is true, that there are issues of fact in this case. For instance, Mr. Ritu said that the sale of the guitars in 2005 was repudiation. We know that's not true. It was infringement. There was no repudiation in 2005. At earliest, it was 2007. Then there was discussion of subsequent communication, subsequent conversations. Well, it should have been discussed by opposing counsel when those were. It's very important that when the 3 years starts in this case. It shows you how easy it is in this case to mix infringement with ownership. There was no repudiation in 2005. There was no reason for Mr. Webster to sue under Petrella in 2005. When were the subsequent conversations? It was in the record that at the funeral of Mr. Abbott, Dean Zielinski, the former owner of Dean Guitar, had said to Mr. Webster in the past, sometimes you ask for permission, sometimes you ask for forgiveness. Everyone in intellectual property law knows what that means. That does not mean you're asserting ownership. Mr. Webster, there's clearly issues of fact here, whether he knew or should have known that there was an ownership claim by the estate. And if the estate had an ownership claim, it clearly should have brought an affirmative counterclaim in this case for deck relief. Mr. Webster did not want to sue his friend's estate. If you read the bios of Mr. Abbott, Mr. Webster was his mentee. It's something he did very, very reluctantly after this case was filed.
I feel some sympathy, and I suspect that was a true motivation, sure. Perhaps not the only one. So I feel for him on that, but it still doesn't get around the fact that if he's unnoticed that somebody else is claiming ownership, mm-hmm. whether Perhaps he was too kind for his own sake back then, but it still means he had notice.
Well, that brings us to the question, Your Honor, then, because Section 106 allows, says that the right to create derivative works is one of the rights held by Mr. Webster as the copyright owner, a new derivative works created in 2015 with the new limited edition. It's difficult to say that that's the exact same guitar that was produced in 2005 because it's not. It was sold as a new guitar. It's a new derivative work that creates a new right under Section 106. And at the very least, Mr. Webster should be allowed a trial on whether he's entitled to damages and injunctive relief to stop Dean Guitars from continuing to make derivative works. They do not have a license to make derivative works forever. This is not the case for this circuit to say that to set a standard that someone can point to a third party who can continue to make derivative works despite something that happened years before. A couple other things I wanted to point out. The opposing counsel said there's a big difference about when Mr. Webster should have sued. Mr. Abbott was murdered. Mr. Webster had received emails with pictures of leather jackets with bullet holes in them. People close to Mr. Abbott were other designers. There was a lot of strange things going on. No one wanted to come out against the estate of Darryl Abbott in Dallas, even in the last year after the summary judgment was granted, because of posts on social media implying that Dean Guitars owned the copyright. Mr. Webster was at a concert where he goes frequently. He was yelled at by people. They got around him and started yelling at him, F you, Buddy Webster, you went after Dime, blah, blah, blah. This is not something that he took lightly. So that's why he didn't sue. Even today, he gets yelled at. Back then, who knows? Let's see. I wanted to point out the issue that the court brought up about the legacy, and this was the same legacy issue that was brought up in Petrella, where the Supreme Court said it's hardly incumbent on copyright owners to challenge each and every actionable infringement. Sometimes the value of the copyrighted work will go up. Sometimes the infringement has no effect on the original work, and sometimes it even complements it with fan sites. Even if an infringement is harmful, it may be too small to justify the cost of litigation. And the court continued, sue now or forever hold your peace would put copyright owners in a very bad position, which is what's implied here. Mr. Rubinson's quote again, I have taken some time and spoken with several people in the know, and the consensus concerning Dime's graphic is that Dime's estate is the legal owner of it. With that said, I would like to work with you on a Dime project because I'm about not making enemies, but making friends. Rita and I have plans to do a Dean from Hell relic and would like you involved for a royalty. Is that of interest? How is that an express repudiation? The people in the know, this is about as equivocal as you can get. Who are the people in the know? Why are they offering a relic? These are issues of fact for trial, and that's clearly been established by everything that was said here today. That this is a case, the court can adopt this new standard, but it should send this case to trial to know, so Buddy Webster can have a hearing on what he knew and when and whether it was reasonable for him to wait. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.